I think there's still a few folks filing in, but I know in the interest of time, we'll probably go ahead and kick this off here. Appreciate everybody attendance here. First, I want to thank the Society of American Baseball Research for allowing me to present this year's Sabre 51 here in Chicago. The title of my presentation is Harnessing the Power of Building Information Technology to Preserve Chicago's Baseball Palace of the World. My name is Brian Powers. I'm a practicing architect here in Chicago, and I've devoted much of my professional and personal career to sports facilities, including the preservation of our historical baseball venues across the country. I've been a Sabre for almost over 30 years, and I find that this is a wonderful forum to share our work and our passion. So the objective of my presentation, I actually have three of them today. First objective of what I want to do is define what building information modeling is and how it can be applied to baseball park research. The second, I want to understand how project workflow was established, how research documentation was acquired, and how information was organized and implemented into a three-dimensional working model. My third and final objective is to demonstrate how data is identified and embedded into predefined modeling elements, where attendees can learn how this data can be used for evaluation of like old stadium seating through what I call artifact tracing. So I won't get too much into the details and the history of the ballpark, but due to the interest of time, but just as a brief overview, Comiskey Park was the home of the Chicago White Sox from 1910 through 1990, also the home of the Chicago American Negro League Giants and the Chicago Cardinals of the NFL. Comiskey Park replaced the old wooden Southside Park and opened July 1st, 1910 at a cost of $750,000, which seems like quite a bargain now compared to the $1.5 billion you might be paying these days. For almost 20 years, Comiskey Park was the oldest baseball park in the major leagues from 1970 through 1990, hosted four World Series, and was the site of three All-Star games. So a little bit of backstory. What I dubbed as the Comiskey Project was actually a culmination of a 30-year endeavor that culminated into an interactive digital model that I completed back in 2020. Now, this was a product of a pandemic where the time and the opportunity gave me the opportunity really to kind of finish what I started. More or less prior to that point, this is more or less a hobby of mine, but a lot of the images you see here, in fact, all of the images are actually three-dimensionally digitally created, they're not photographs. So I really took the time to try to get it right and model this with accuracy through virtual reality. You know, I tried to recreate all areas of the ballpark, including the concourses, the clubhouses, even the historical Bard's Room. What I'm going to do is share the power of this model much beyond the images that you see here, and ultimately talk about how this will benefit the research of our cathedrals of baseball. For those of you that saw Last Comiskey last night, a lot of the digital images that you saw represented throughout the film, was a result of this work, and I was very humbled to work with Matt on that amazing documentary. So the odyssey really began in the last year of Comiskey Park when it opened, or when it finished its final season in 1990. What started out as a kind of a college sketch assignment, the premise of it was I just had to spend some time there, sketch it out, and kind of peel back the paint and really understand personally, what evolved in the design of the project. It's a reconstruction exercise. It's just going to be a quick thing at the time. But as I got further into it, I was really intrigued with the details. I really wanted to learn more about it, even after that day that I spent there at the park. So 6 months later, in the spring of 91, that's when the time Comiskey Park met the inevitable wrecking ball. I understood for the very first time the loss of the built environment, really what it meant to me and the community and ultimately the people around me. I was kind of disappointed by the lack of preservation, that there was no physical remnants of the park, that was preserved. And so in a way, I kind of took it upon myself, well, maybe I could just kind of collect things that would kind of represent it and keep the memories alive that way. But as we saw in the building boom of ballparks in the 1990s, that was kind of the precedent. When we saw other parks like Tiger Stadium meet the same fate. So since I kind of had an epiphany at that time. As I mentioned, the search was on for drawings, photos, historical records, anything I could get my hands on. Through my professional involvement, as an architect, I was able to, over the years, develop relationships and contact with really five key sources where I was able to accumulate this information. Users and owners, you know, that operated the facility, archives, library resources, city records, municipal records, museum and repositories, you know, like the Hall of Fame in Cooperstown, and other architecture and engineering firms that that I've gotten to know over the years that also put out their hand. Of course, this journey took me across the country just for Comiskey Park alone. I spent time here in Chicago, Cleveland, Ohio, Kansas City, Missouri, and as I mentioned, Cooperstown, New York. So my original plan was, as I acquired this information, I was starting to build this collection. I asked myself, now that I have it, what should I do with it? How can I creatively share this? Well, my original plan was to develop what I call a comprehensive setup as-built. You know, I wanted to develop how the park looked in 1990 when they shut it down and submit those records to the Library of Congress, you know, for future resources. Well, as I was wrapping up the, you know, the architecture drawings, as you see here, I drew all these, you know, based on the blueprints. You know, which meant the Historical American Building Survey based on the recommendations of the Library of Congress. And as I was completing this, I was constantly being challenged by the advancement or the continuous advancement of technology. You know, when I first started this, you know, AutoCAD was still kind of at its infancy and things just started to go from there. One of the challenges, So in the last 10, 15 years, new methods started to emerge and really changed the way architecture and engineering develop their work. It's called Building Information Modeling, or BIM for short. By definition, it's kind of a mouthful here, but I'll read it to you as defined by Autodesk. Building Information Modeling is a holistic process of creating and managing information for a built asset. Based on intelligent model and enabled by a cloud platform, BIM integrates structured, multidisciplinary data, that's the key word here, to produce a digital representation of an asset across its life cycle for planning, design, construction, and operations. So that is quite a bit there. So I'm going to attempt to kind of boil that down in its bare essence and kind of demonstrate to you how this is applicable to what we do in the sport of baseball. So a little bit of difference between AutoCAD and BIM. Basic AutoCAD is really 2D line drawing. It's kind of like drawing by hand. You know, 2 points determine a line, you know, 4 lines determine a square. Then as that technology started to advance, we had the ability to extrude that into 3 dimensions. Well, those 4 lines could become a cube. Well, that gives you mass modeling, which is nice, and we're able to do some very nice things with it. But when BIM came along, you know, 15, 20 years ago, that really meant informational modeling. You could now take this cube and embed it with data to understand really what the properties of those elements are. So really, in a nutshell, both CAD and BIM provide geometric expressions of building and architecture, but BIM goes beyond to capture the relationships, the data, and the behaviors of real-world elements. Of course, so the key word here is data and what you can do with it. And being baseball, even architecture and engineering, I kind of see the similarities where data is kind of, in many cases, a lot of the basis of what we do on a daily basis. So I mentioned to you a little bit about drawing preservation, but some of BIM applications to architecture research, and particularly ballparks. I talked a little bit about drawing and historical preservation, but we're also seeing changes in implementations in augmented and virtual reality. That's really what I wanted to do with this project as well. You have database cataloging, which I'll talk about with the seating example, virtual simulations, game simulations, education and storytelling, and of course the game industry has really grown exponentially, you know, in the last several years. I'm often asked what kind of software do I use to develop my work. I chose what was called a Revit 2020. Revit is a professional software used in the architecture industry, known for its very powerful ability to host data and modeling elements. Some of the criteria I used to evaluate the software was I wanted to be, in addition to data hosting, parametric, where it's adaptable, you know, to many situations. It could accommodate supplemental software programs like the VR platforms, rendering software, fly-throughs, even sun studies, engineering attachments, you know, things like that. And I also wanted the ability to continue to add data long-term. So as we know, in the research industry, we're always getting new information, and we're always trying to kind of update what we do. So I want to have that ability to update that, and again, to incorporate everything into VR platforms. So once, so what we do to build the model is I basically develop these elements, like the cube I talked about earlier, into what we call a community of families. Now, so each element you see in the model here, like trusses, the columns, the framework for the structure, those are all independent families with data in it. And so what you end up with is a so-called kit of parts, where you can essentially build a model and house all this information, you know, in one place. Like anything, whether it's computer programming, the quality of data you put into it will equal or better the quality you get out of it. So a couple examples here. When I start to incorporate and build the families, I build it much like you would an actual building. You start from the ground up, work from the field coming out. You can see the structural framework, you know, the concrete frame at the lower bowl, the steel framework up at the top. So each one of these is composed of different families, and that allows you to really strip back the bare elements of the ballpark and study the essence of the design. I can also turn it inside out, just look at the basic seating bowl, how that's structured. You learn a lot of interesting things. You can isolate elements like the bowl, the concourses, the ramps. One thing that the model allows us to do is I love to slice and dice it and really just start to overlay it, you know, with different elements. My goal is to develop other ballparks where I can start comparing apples to apples with a lot of this data. I can take plan cross sections like the clubhouse complex you see here on the screen. So what I'm going to explain is to give you an example of really what this power is through what I call artifact tracing. So by definition, artifact tracing is identifying and incorporating data within the model to trace locations and identify properties of architecture elements. So what that helps us do is identify objects, you know, within the buildings, such as catalog seat types, understand the history of individual building elements, and it also helps us place a valuation maybe on memorabilia, like if you want to, like if you find a seat at the garage sale, you know, or something like that. So there are five steps in this process to create what I call a family here. First is identify, model, and categorize the typologies. Second is to identify parameters or commonalities, you know, within each of those typologies. Then I could incorporate those families or those building blocks into the actual model itself. Test those parameters to see if it would filter out properly. Then ultimately locate the element to where it's where we can actually put it in practice. So Comiskey Park, give you an example of the seats. If you were to kind of look at it in its bare essence, there are four types of seats that were found around the park. You had your classic style, which a lot of people are familiar with. You had your box seats up front, your suite seating, which is the theater type of seats, and then your contour seats. So those are the four typologies, you know, that I modeled first. So once the typologies are identified, you want to start to begin embedding sub-elements, you know, within those typologies. One of the things I wanted to do was embed historical seat numbers, you know, through the earlier eras. Going back to 1927, Comiskey Park renumbered their seats, I think, three different times, you know, throughout that course of history. So I want to make sure anything I can locate in the model has that ability to find that data. So as you start to identify these different parameters, you start to look for other commonalities that you can tell the story. You know, you can take your typical seat that you could find, you know, that was from the park. You look at these commonalities and that can be used to catalog or for searching. You identify clues. You know, some examples, you know, you might have one type, but you might have subcomponents of that. Like, are they floor mounted or are they riser mounted? Do you have the ornamental grillage, you know, at the end? What type of seat numbering do you have? What about the colors? You know, Comiskey Park, you know, they painted their seats a number of times. I mean, you have red seats, you have light blue. Most people are familiar with the green, but they held a variety of colors up until that point. So you identify those characteristics, you incorporate them in the model, and you have the ability to pull up tabs or the ability to understand within the model with the click of the mouse. You can start assigning numbers, data, you know, to these various elements. So once that's done, you know, you kind of have your typical chair typology. I begin placing those in the model like you see here, kind of one chair at a time. You know, one thing I did was I was able to have the ticketing manifests for all the various seat numbering over the years. So I placed in all 44 plus thousand seats, you know, based on the ticketing manifest, you know, rows, seat numbers, and sections, until you get a whole comprehensive, you know, model of that data. So once that information is incorporated in the model, you test that information, you find out all those commonalities that I talked about earlier. You can start have fun with it a little bit and start to sort this data out and really test those parameters. So you take that seed example I talked about a little bit earlier, and I said, well, okay, let's say somebody found the seat and they were interested in, well, where exactly was it in the stadium. You know, you could see where, like, you can't really, I don't know if you can see it on the screen, but 303, you know, that's from the first generation of seat numbering. So if you use that as sort of a common denominator, you know, when you sort, you know, you could physically do that, you know, with the tabs in the model. And once you sort all seats within the ballpark, I found that I actually had six hits that had six seats that had a 303 number. You start looking at the other columns, where there's one other one that was had a secondary number labeled number 20. Well, that's the seat. You know, so that seat that I randomly pulled off the internet, I was able to find its location in the ballpark here based on the data that I entered. So I could physically highlight that seat in the model. I could pull up a floor plan. The little blue dot there is where the seat is located. Click on it, we could get all the specifications and the history of that particular element, you know, like when it was installed. Like this one, for instance, is part of the 1927 outfield additions. You could highlight that. What's nice about it is the more you know about an artifact and element, the more it really helps the appraisal values. That's one benefit I really see all this happening. You know, it helps it work through the collector's market a lot. It's fun to know the story. It's nice to kind of track the history, and you can also track trends, you know, like pricing and that sort of thing in the memorabilia market. I think we just have a couple more minutes left. I could just go through real quickly a second example. I could do a similar search, like if you found a ticket in a drawer from your father's 1959 World Series. You think, well, gosh, what was this view like that day with that ticket? Well, I could enter the numbers, you know, the rows section and seat number off that ticket. Much the same way I did with the previous example with the chair, highlight it in the model. I did get a hit for it. You could find out that it was just behind home plate, around the third base side. Highlight that in a three-dimensional model. I could pull up a view of what it was like for that particular ticket, you know, here in this model. Much like the previous example, you know, anything like that. Like I said, I used the seating as an example, but you can pull up all the data behind that seat, learn a lot about, you know, the intricacies, you know, of that ballpark. So as I wrap up here, one of the things I wanted to do, and it's kind of a personal goal of mine, it's more of a hobby if anything, I'd like to start building these databases with these old ballparks. I recently completed Crosley Field in Cincinnati, Ohio, much the same way I did Comiskey Park. That was my latest project. I finished that up this spring. And then before that, I did League Park in Cleveland, Ohio. So if you ever get a chance to visit the Baseball Historical Museum at the site of Old League Park. They actually have some additional interactive exhibits that I put together as part of that museum study. But it's nice to be able to experience parks that are, you know, 50, 60, 70 or removed and open this experience up to a new generation of fans. Most recently in my professional work, I was involved in the restorations of a Hamtramck Stadium. I worked with Gary Gillette, who's somebody I might know, but I used much of the same technology in the real world here as I did with these previous ballparks I just talked about. The state of Michigan and the governor just recently honored us with the State Historical Preservation Award. You know, this technology was a big backbone, you know, as to how we were able to accomplish that. So in conclusion, building information modeling is a holistic process of creating and managing information for a built asset. Data comes hosted within families. And this information can be extracted from BIM models to assist in research and valuation. And through artifact tracing, it can be used to identify, trace, and catalog elements within a BIM model. So with that, I'll wrap it up with any questions you might have. If you're interested in more in experiencing these virtual environments, you can check out my website up here, as well as the other social media platforms like Twitter and Facebook. Yeah, it was 1960, I believe. Yeah, this is when, yeah, I think Bill Veeck just took over the club. So he wanted to give it a brighter appearance. If you heard Mike talk this morning, he's really big and engaging, you know, because I think a lot of people were, at that time were kind of afraid to come to the park. Yeah, he wanted to do what he can to brighten it up. You know, some people question, you know, why it was done.
I mean, I assume you have all the different iterations going back to its beginning in your program.
Yeah, I could certainly do that. My model captured the way the park stood on 1990. I don't know if you saw one of the earlier slides, but I had a picture of the scoreboard, and there's a time on it. It's at 4:39. I don't know if anybody caught the significance of that, but that was final out. That was the time when the final out occurred in the park. So it was kind of a snapshot, you know, in time.
Has anybody ever used your model to actually rebuild an old stadium exactly like the old stadium, actually rebuild it? Not that you model it, but actually build it?
Yeah, this is, since this is professional software, I mean, I could certainly convert these to drawings, bring them down to the building permit office. But given that the codes are how they changed in the last 100 years, are probably kind of tough to do. But that previous example of Hamtramck Stadium, I think, was a good example, I think, of how this technology could be used, in this case, rehabilitate the historical structure.
But nobody's ever actually rebuilt a stadium following your model, like Comiskey Park. Could they actually, if they hadn't done the new start, if they wanted to rebuild Comiskey exactly the way it was before, they could take your model and they could rebuild it exactly?
Yes, they can, because everything you see in my models here is modeled to scale based on the construction blueprints. So I try to get it to the inch. So I could 3D print a live version of this if I wanted to do that. I don't know if anybody could, but food for thought. Again, I think I'm just really scratching the infancy of this technology. I mean, I think it's so exciting to learn what the future lies and what we can do with all this.
Has anybody ever used your model to rebuild other historical buildings besides baseball parks?
Yeah, I certainly use it in my professional work for other building types as well.
Mm-hmm. Is your data limited to architectural data, or can you program elements of the experience of going there one time or another into this?
One of the important aspects of using the software is that so that it's compatible with other software where I could integrate those kinds of experiences. You know, the Revit platform, I could certainly do very high-level walkthroughs, but I think to capture the experiences like you saw in Last Comiskey or on my website, we need to integrate other software technologies to have that experience, which is something I'm playing around with constantly. So.
Okay, so I understand building information management. I think the way you described it was this way to collect information on the assets of an already existing building?
That's one way to look at it, yeah. That's the way I'm applying it here.
Oh, okay, so you can also use it in the planning and construction of new buildings.
Correct.
So I noticed that earlier slide and said, you know, throughout its life cycle, right?
Yes.
During, I guess, something like conception, building, and then implementation of the design, opening of the design.
Yeah.
You kind of didn't go beyond that. Can it be used in a way that kind of estimates decline, degradation, and finally the disuse of a building so that you can use it to say, this building is built throughout its life cycle. The life cycle could be 50 years, 100 years, 150 years.
Yeah.
So use that way?
Yeah, yes, it can, absolutely. I mean, that's one of the very benefits of this particular software. We're seeing a lot of like owners of facilities, stadium or otherwise, they use it to manage their infrastructure. You know, so certainly as you know, you can track you know maintenance you know through it. So you kind of have, if you heard the term digital twin and things like that. You know, it's a technology that Boeing has used for a long time with their work. We're starting to see the building industry catch up in that regard using this kind of technology.
Okay, so it's just a $64 question here. Do you have a feel based on all of this of what the potential life cycle of the current Southside ballparks would be? Do you have any feel for that based on the information you have?
It's hard to put a concrete number to it, but I think it's something that can be tracked. You know, I think as more data is put into it, and I think as you start to maybe compare it, use it as a benchmark, you know, for other facilities, that's where you start to realize what those trends are. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, one more question. Anybody? If think we've got one more minute.
So is the potential that I could put a 3D headset on and then walk through an old ballpark?
Yes, and I that's what I do here with that, yeah.
I mean Shive Park or some of these other ballparks, yeah, would be so fascinating to walk through and be able to get that experience of running into the dugout.
Yeah, yes, I certainly, I use the Oculus goggles at home. Right now, to be able to experience that, you have to be tethered to my computer to do it. So I'm looking for ways, to share that technology. But yes, I could walk into the clubhouse, like Dick Allen would, grab his favorite bat and, take the field. Thank you.